Well, we want to get started here, so we don't run out of time. We've got one little last thing we'd like to present. Our home group back in the States is the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag. And we like to call it the greatest Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in the world. And recently, since we've had more spiritual growth, we've stopped saying that. You know? But yeah, except for this last time that I just said it, yes. And this meeting, I think we've got some slides here. This meeting started in 1948. Okay. And what we're going to describe to you is the explosion of that meeting. And we'll get going here. We'll give you a little bit of history of it. And what happened is the meeting blew up over a specific incident. And what some of us did is we put together an effort and we did a group inventory to try to resolve these issues. And what this is to us is the actual a living experience of the traditions and of unity.
J. Alcoholic. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've been talking about working the steps.
Sponsoring. How do you do it correctly?
And so I grow up in this AA meeting that's an old school meeting. It's a chaired meeting, which means we don't recognize hands. Okay? When you're new, you sit down, you shut up, and you listen, no matter what. People with under a year do not participate. Now, when I came to the meeting, it's an hour and a half meeting. Never get up and get coffee. Never go to the bathroom. You stay seated and listen to the participation during the entire meeting. Very important. You can't stay sober if you don't follow those rules. When I came to the meeting, there were like seven guys at the meeting. So I'm number eight. It's a 90-minute meeting. Never was I able to participate because I had under a year and obviously I had nothing to say. Of course, I had a wealth of experience. And it was very, very hierarchical. Now, the other thing that was great about this meeting is the meeting starts in Hermosa Beach, and then about 11 years later, they opened an Alano Club in the neighboring community, Manhattan Beach. I come to the meeting, it's still the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag. It met in Manhattan Beach for 40 years, and it stayed the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag. Just a little rigid. We didn't like change at all. In fact, in 1988, it broke up over moving into a large room. In the Alano Club, there's two rooms. There's the small, intimate room where you can really tell the truth, and then there's a large, well-lit room, which is obviously not conducive to carrying a message of depth and weight. So you can imagine this is in Southern California. Many people are still smoking back in these days, and so we've got, like, as the meeting starts to grow, because it really did have a message, everybody's jackknifed into this thing. There's like 65 guys. Everybody's smoking. It's summertime. There's no ventilation. It's a nicotine sauna. Yeah, I'd come home. I'd have to wash my hair three times before I could get in bed. And we don't see that the meeting is getting very, very factionalized
because we're doing AA correctly. We're going out and saving the world and, you know, we're always talking about, you know, steps, God, and sponsorship. And then all these cocaine addicts come in. Have you seen these people? Now, I am from an era where cocaine was not addictive. We just did it all the time.
We weren't heir to the technology that some of you have enjoyed.
So when we a bunch of guys wanted to move into the large room. We had a vote, and it was voted down. So those guys started another meeting. 2 months later, we had another vote, and we moved into the large room because we're brilliant. And one of the things that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous in general, and it certainly happened in our meeting, is the meeting becomes everything. Now, that's kind of a natural progression. It's my home group. It means a lot to me. I've been going to that meeting for 22 years. So I get real protective of it and kind of the community of it. Well, one of the things that started happening is the common welfare of the group becomes secondary when you're focused on the structure of the meeting. Because what you're trying to do is get the people to adapt to the structure. And some of the things that will come out of that is that there are things that you believe threaten the structure of the meeting, therefore threaten your sobriety. And chanting principles before personalities, God could and would if he were sought. In California, we read chapter 5 and chapter 3, portions of it, at every single meeting, constantly. It's a tradition. And what people will do is they will chant the last few lines of a given statement out of the big book when that is read. There are people that feel that chanting is a threat to Alcoholics Anonymous, and which is bizarre to me. But these people feel it. We actually had a vote in the meeting, and it's in our format. There will be no chanting or chiming in. So when the reader reads that format, everybody repeats, "and chiming in." You know? This is a difficult thing for me to describe to you what all this means. But it's the way it is. I know it's not like that in Reykjavik. The correctness of it becomes foremost. So what began to happen in our meeting is that factions began to be set up in the meeting. We had Cocaine Corner. There is entrenched power in the meeting where certain people sit in the same place all the time, you know, no matter what. So when I walk in there and somebody has taken my seat, I get a little pissy about it, you know. But I try to cover it up, you know.
The attraction of this meeting, when you I've came to this meeting later than these two guys, but when you come into the meeting is there is clearly a message. There's a strength in this meeting that's attractive. So when you go in, it's like I made the grave error of never having been to this meeting of sharing about a problem I was having with my girlfriend. And the error went out of the room. And a guy leaned over to me and said, "We share about recovery from alcoholism," after that. Told me that and straightened me out. And I was embarrassed and I was afraid. You will, if you come to our meeting and someone shares and they say, "When I first came here, I didn't like it here." That's a common theme. "When I first came here, I was afraid of you guys. We've been called the Dick Waggers meeting." I think that's not fair, because what unifies that meeting is there's examples of Alcoholics Anonymous program in progress. Everybody in there, or I'd say a larger percentage than most meetings, are sponsoring people. Not everybody in there, that's not true. Many, many people are working the steps in there. It's rare to find anyone who hangs in with that meeting for very long who's not actively working the steps. It's hard. It would be hard to do, you know, to do that. There's examples of sponsorship. We actually do now, we voted into our format at the end of the meeting, we say who in this room is available for sponsorship. If there's 100 guys, 98 guys raise their hands. The two guys with one day are like, "What?" You know. But they can't say, "I didn't know how to find a sponsor," because there's a guy on either side of them going, "Hello." And then the enthusiasm for the newcomer. Jay said at the close of yesterday's talk, if you want to know how to get the newcomer, when you walk into the meeting, talk to the guy who you don't know. If you see a guy standing off by himself, it's hard to stand off by yourself at the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag. You get surrounded. And if you share that you're going out of your mind and you might drink or you're new to the town, if you're a visitor, you will leave the place with more phone numbers than you know what to do with. That's the attraction and the strengths of this group.
You want to do super righteous?
So, because we're the greatest meeting in the world, we don't do a lot of self-examination. We have steps, we have concepts, we have traditions. We don't have to really look at ourselves. And I really believe that what we're describing is the same thing that happens. I know it doesn't happen here, but it happened to me between the time that I had about 10 and 14 years sober, that the inventories that I was writing, the way I was looking at myself was very rote. I knew what my problems was. My sponsor knew what my problems were. My wife would be happy to tell you what my problems were. You know, so it was all self-evident, no reason to do any real introspection. So what happens is, if you don't have any real introspection, any format for it, what happens is things start to get rigid, and you don't realize it. So there's this community that I call we got this from Ivester, the super righteous. These are the people that believe that the meeting is the most important thing. They're the ones who believe that they don't have to participate in a lot of the Alcoholics Anonymous community work. Then there's the drug addicts. Who are they? Do we test them? You know. They're hiding out in AA. Then there are what I like to call myself, the informed. These are the people like myself that I've sponsored and that they've sponsored. And see, one of the things that if I sponsor you, at some point you got to go do your time in general service. You have to spend a couple years in general service. You have to spend a couple years in central service. You have to spend a couple years in hospitals and institutions. And if you got sober at the Ilano Club, you got to serve on the board at the Ilano Club one time too, which is a whole other form of self-flagellation. But the thing is that I believe that it's really important to be informed about where you're at, all the parts of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm going to spend my life here. And I'm not saying you do it all at the same time. That's about 10, 12 years worth of work right there. And it's not a lot of work, but it's irritating and inconvenient, like the rest of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then there's what I like to call the unaligned, which are people that are very, very in love with the meeting that come, but that aren't sponsored by people in the meeting, but that just love to hear the message and that are involved within the community.
So in this meeting, you've got about 100 guys. The room is full. There's almost standing room only every Monday night. You've got the meeting starts at 8:30. You got to get there by 7:45 to get a seat, to get in it. Very popular, very powerful, very strong. But there's a whole faction in the group that is beginning, that feels that they're not being heard. And I don't mean just by not sharing in the meeting, although that's part of it. It's a led meeting, so people pick on people, and there's a certain people that get picked on all the time. And there's a whole faction in there that aren't being picked on to share. But what I mean by not being heard is their opinion of the meeting and what's going on is not being utilized. It's not being tapped. They're not really participating in what's going on. And they're beginning to feel that way. They feel set aside or pushed away in some form or another. The insular part, the self-righteous, there's a whole, there one particular icon, but kind of him and his lieutenants and a large part of the group of the meeting, guys that I really looked up to, several of which were very close friends of mine, did not participate in AA. When I look back on it now, I mean, they're just going to meetings, they're sponsoring each other, but they're not showing up at the Labor Day picnic. They don't participate in the variety show. They don't do any take any commitments at the at our local roundup. You know, they don't help us put on the Christmas party we do every December. You know, they kind of poo-poo that. They make fun of it. You know, you pass the clipboard around and they don't. They just, Jesus, what's that crap? As if it's something other than AA. So they're not really part of the community. They've got their own little setup. And nothing comes into that group that could shake their vision of what AA is. If you approach them with something that looks different, they'll just blow you off, turn and walk away. They don't want to hear it. And that faction, that part of the group, got quite large and very dominant and began to enforce itself in the meeting. The chanting thing came up. That group said, no chanting. It's killing AA. It came out of the hospitals and stuff, you know. And I was secretary of the meeting. At 5 years sober, I ran a campaign to become secretary of the meeting.
It was frightening.
I had little suckers that had a flag on it that said, trust Bill. And I passed them out.
I told him, you can't do this.
He tried to have me impeached. You know, he really did. I mean, it was really. But I figured, you know, in my pursuit of becoming president of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that becoming secretary of the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag was a huge rung in the ladder. You know, I mean, if I became secretary, this is where the men are men and the sheep are nervous, you know, and if I could run this meeting. Well, they're into sheep here. You know, they know sheep. You know, lots of sheep. Anyway, it's an outside issue. So I got elected. It was by far the worst year of my sobriety. I mean, the reason that this is a sensitive issue to me is because when I became secretary, if there were any problems in the meeting, they came to the secretary to talk about it. I mean, each one of these groups, if they had an issue, they did not deal with the issue themselves. Because that would have meant direct confrontation, like true human interaction. They come to the secretary and say, you got to do something about this. You're the sergeant at arms. You're the boss. You got to kick him out. You got to do this. You got to, you know, and it was awful. I mean, I almost got into a couple of fist fights. The focus on doing AA correctly. Well, you know, there's a couple of things about that. You can determine what correct is. And then if the other people around you think correct is something different, that's called war. And they're, you know, because the...
It's America.
It's, yeah. And it began to get flaky around the edges. It got pretty shaky.
Actually, Bill, you were there for this.
What happened was, this was 3 years ago, about 3 years ago. One of the guys in the group, kind of a fringe player in the group, shows up to the meeting with a 15 or 16-month-old girl child. And he comes into the room, and his marriage was breaking up, and he was having some trouble, and he wanted to come to the meeting, and he brought the kid with him. So he comes and he sits down and the meeting starts. One of the icons of the self-righteous group got pissed about this, said, you know, we can't have this. This is a violation. You know, and he goes to the secretary and says, you got to tell him to leave. Take the kid and get out of here. This is for men, alcoholics only. Right? So the spirit of that law, or that rule, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, the whole idea of a men's stag is a violation of the traditions. You know, if you stop him, a large part of the world does not agree with having men's stags because the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking, right? Well, if you make it a requirement that you got to be a man too, that's a violation of the third tradition, isn't it? These guys, the self-righteous ones, don't recognize that. They use the traditions however it fits within their framework of doing AA correctly. So now this becomes a violation of the traditions. Now, if the spirit of the law is that we don't want women in the meeting, do you suppose that spirit includes 15-month-old babies? You think that's what they were thinking about? To this day, these guys will hold fast to the reason the meeting broke up is because that guy brought the kid into the room. I think there's a lot more to it than that. So it blew up. We actually took a vote right in the middle of the meeting, and it got voted. The vote was, should we kick this guy and his baby out of the room? I don't know about you, but I had a real hard time voting for kicking some guy out of an AA meeting. It just didn't sit well with me. So when the vote didn't go their way, the icon and his lieutenants walked out of the room. And for about another 15 minutes afterwards, there was a slow trickle as guys were sitting in there wondering, well, should I follow him or should I stay? What about the, I don't, you know. And I'm sitting in there and you slowly watch him go, well, fuck it, I'm out of here. You know, the people, nobody knew really what the hell happened, okay? So the icon left.
So we had to either ignore the fact that our meeting was factions and falling apart. We had to ignore this explosion and go on with our allergy to change. Or we had to turn and start the introspection that we had not been doing. And the irony of all this, so there was the denial. We're good, we're fine, it's okay that a bunch of guys who do the program very well and who are good sponsors and are good AA members left. We're going to pretend that that doesn't reflect on this meeting. We're going to pretend it was the kid. Then there was the fantasy. I don't really understand the fantasy.
Well, that we could bring it back together.
That we could just ignore it without doing anything and it'll all come back congeal together. Half the membership's left. It was a big, full room. It's half empty now. Desire to recapture the past. We're just going to make it like it was. This is a good thing. It's going to be like it was. Then, the irony of all this is that we had a steering committee, and a guy who left said, you know, there is a little-known thing in Alcoholics Anonymous that meetings do inventories, that there is a group inventory. There's actually a format. You can get this. You can do this. And the guy still left, but we decided, who are we? Is the tradition that the argument is about is that the group comes ahead of the individual. Are we behaving correctly? Are we sincerely doing Alcoholics Anonymous the way it should be done? A lot of guys didn't want to look at it. They said, don't pick at the wound. Don't pick at the scab. It's okay. They left. It's okay. We're okay. There were questions that we posed. We had meetings at Bill's house. We got the format for the inventory as a group. People were against it. The interesting thing was the people that showed up for the steering committee that were most vocally against it were people who had not worked inventories in their own recovery. How can I let the group do an inventory when I haven't done an inventory? Clearly, the inventory is wrong. So we asked the questions. We did some homework. We looked up how you do this. We met at Bill's house, and we discussed, first of all, we have to get the group to vote. It's a group conscience. It's not 4 or 5 or 10 of us. I think about 10 of us who are going to tell the group we're doing an inventory. That's what got us into trouble in the first place. So we had to present this to them and ask them, are you willing to do this? And people came to the steering committee. There was some debate, that kind of debate in AA that can go round and around and around. And we finally decided that we were going to do this.
So the informed,
you know, I mean, this is going at Bill's house. I sponsor Bill. I'm, believe it or not, one of the other icons. I know you can't believe that.
He's the hippie.
It's just love. It's just love. And so, see, having had experience of general service for 8 years, going through and doing all the different commitments, you know, I'm not afraid of this stuff. I think it's been something that I've wanted our group to do for years, but these people that were rigid, they really didn't want to take a look. And so, you know, this whole question of what is the purpose of the group?
Well, we know what the purpose of the group is. We're going to do AA right, and we're going to enforce it on everyone.
Is that really it? And then this question about what can the group do to, what more can we do to carry the message? And, you know, for us, it was what kind of meeting environment are we providing for people? Do the new members stick? Is the turnover excessive? Well, the truth was, in the old days, and the problem that we've got now is, you can't get a seat if you're new. If you look at the meeting directory and you show up to this meeting at 8:30 because it's a closed men's stag, you can't find a seat if you're there at 8:15. Can't do it. Are all the members given an opportunity to speak? That was clearly not happening. That was clearly not happening. And are all members able to participate in group activities? I think we did a real good job of that. I think that was one of those things that we were pretty clear that we had done a good job. But this was the questions that we gave to every member of the group. We printed them out. We had a steering committee meeting. And then at the meeting for a couple weeks, we made sure that there were copies of this so that everybody would go home and do their homework.
I know you'll probably find this difficult to believe, but I was kind of from the background pushing this thing in a certain direction. I had a vision, you know, and I was having fits over it. And one night in particular, I was at home, Karen and I, and I said to her, I says, you know, if these people don't do this, I'm out of here. I mean, there was a lot of resistance to the inventory. And my position was, if they will not allow themselves to be enlightened and do this the way it should be done, I'm gone. Now, Jay and I both, 1 year before this, Jay came to me, he goes, I got to get out of this meeting, it's not going. And I told him, I said, you can't leave, man, you can't leave. You just can't get up and leave. Then years later, I went to him and I said, I got to get out of here. These guys are pissing me off. And he goes, you can't leave, you know. So now here's our opportunity to really get this thing going in what we feel is the right direction. This is what should happen. So I said to Karen, I said, you know, this is it. I'm just, if they don't do it, I'm out. And she said to me, you say you believe in this stuff. You say that God really does manifest himself as the group conscience in these meetings. You say you believe that. So why don't you take this thing and lay it before the members of your home group and then step away from it. And if they don't do it the way you want to, don't take your ball and go home. I've never hit her before, you know.
Another reason why I love her, she can tell him the truth and get away with it. I have to pay publicly. I wanted to talk about this thing. One of the biggest resistance behaviors of Alcoholics Anonymous as a group is, what about the newcomer? You know, we had this thing in California where smoking became, you know, bad, and it must be stamped out. And, you know, I mean, it really is, you know, like I say, the best sponsors in the world still smoke because they can always be right. But it was a horrible thing in the Alcoholics Anonymous community. And people were actually saying, we've got to keep smoking in the meetings because of the newcomer. Now, we all know that all newcomers smoke. I mean, that's true. They smoke crack, they smoke this. But the thing is that they, when they're at work, they can't smoke at work. When they're in the house, their wives or girlfriends or their dogs probably say, get out of here. We don't want you smoking in here. But somehow in the meeting, they had the divine right to smoke. Odd. We don't want to change because of the newcomer. I belong to an 11-step group. A little sidebar here. It's one of the great meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world. And it really is. It really is. It has... yes. And it has nothing to do with the fact that I attended on a regular basis. Every Thursday night in Manhattan Beach, you're welcome, 7:30 p.m. But what happened in that meeting is Wayne's friend, Bill's friend Wayne was made secretary, and he had the audacity to say in this meeting that had been going for 40 years, why don't we meditate at the 11-step group? You would have thought we said, let's have sex publicly. I mean, the group just went crazy. And it was all about, what about the newcomer? Now, this meeting, which was not the greatest meeting in the world at the time, had become a thing where about the same 18 aerospace engineers and realtors met on a weekly basis to kvetch and bitch about the pricing of their real estate. It was not focused specifically on the 11th step. And then they went out for pizza. We had a group conscience, and all they were holding forth about, yeah, what about the newcomer? We can't be meditating in the meeting. The group conscience was, screw the newcomer, we're going to meditate. The meeting went from 24 to 90 in a room that can hold 60, and most of the at least half the room had under 6 months of sobriety because they wanted to have an experience of meditation. You know, and one more time, here was this thing about what about the newcomer being used against the evolution, the spiritual evolution of the group.
So one of the things, the argument about we wanted to do the inventory in the meeting, not in an outside area. We wanted to do it in the meeting because we felt that if we did it somewhere else, no one would show up. All these people that were against it would not participate, and we wanted to manipulate this thing so that they would have to participate. So it became important that we do it in the meeting time. And the argument was, says, well, what about the newcomer? Well, we're having one of these steering committee meetings, and this new guy who's been coming in and out of AA for about 10 years is standing outside. One of the guys that didn't agree with the inventory who was standing outside sent the newcomer into the steering committee meeting. The newcomer sitting in the meeting as we're debating whether this would be good for the newcomers, and he stands up and he says, this is incredible, man. I've heard about this stuff in AA. You guys are really serious. You really care about your group. I'm impressed. And a silence fell over the room, you know. I mean, this guy looked like a newcomer. He was disheveled. He had 1 or 2 days sober, something like that. He's still sober, this guy, and he's an active member of the group. It impressed him. I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything better, you know. The voiceless ones, in this process of putting the inventory together, of coming up with the format, the voiceless ones, the ones that weren't being heard, rose to the surface. All of a sudden, there was this core group of members in the group that we were kind of insensitive to that came to the surface and began to take charge of this whole effort that we were starting to do, of putting this inventory together. They became the primary supporters of what it is we were trying to do. The question came out, Jay and I, what are they up to now? What are they trying to do now? Now, this was something that we tried to get our group to do years before. We wanted to make this meeting, we wanted to turn it into a group and start other meetings and make it larger than it was. And this was just poo-pooed and blown off, you know, just sit down and be quiet, you know, don't rock the boat. Well, now what was happening is in this whole effort, there was this thing, well, these guys are manipulating this. Bill is manipulating this. Jay is manipulating this. So we extracted ourselves from the process. About halfway through it, we just backed right off and got out of it and let them run with the ball. when we actually had the inventory, When we actually did the inventory, a very odd thing happened. Everybody went along with this ultimately. We passed out the questions. Everybody was to go home and fill out the answers. When we got to the meeting itself where we were going to do the inventory, we put some names in the hat and we pulled out one person that would run the inventory. So it was a blind draw. And, of course, the good lawyer's name came out of the hat, which was really cool. You know, it was divine intervention. And this guy was to lead the actual inventory as we did it. We had a three-minute timer. No one was to go beyond the timer. And there would be this kind of unaligned leadership role that would happen in the meeting. An odd thing happened that evening. The timer never went off. No one went over the allotted time. Everyone was able to participate. All the questions were answered. We had two guys that were, their job was to take minutes in the meeting. In the process of putting this meeting together, of the steering committees, there was yelling and screaming that happened. One of the members came up with a civility statement. He sat through one of these things, and I think maybe I might have yelled at somebody. I'm not sure, you know. And he came up with a civility statement that we started reading at the beginning of each meeting. And we read it at the beginning of the inventory about how we're to behave. The civility statement was honored. No one yelled at anybody else. No voices were raised. I walked outside that room that night, and myself and Jay and another guy, Steve Lamb, and Steve and I in particular looked at each other and went, what was that? What the hell just happened in there? Those aren't the same people. It was an incredible experience. It's something that it is truly experiential. You can't describe it if you weren't really there to really witness it happen, to see everything just hum along. People participated. The voices were heard.
So what's the group like now? We had a lot of empty chairs when we did that inventory and leading up to that inventory after we blew up. We don't have any empty chairs now. A lot of young people. We have a panel of the Salvation Army that was an interesting story. A guy that I sponsored, we call him Dude because he is such a surfer. He'd been to the Salvation Army. He'd been through the Salvation Army program three times, and I said, you know, you really got to give back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he took a panel by himself to the Salvation Army for years, every Wednesday night. We asked him to give us the panel. We want to take it as a group. And from his clutched fingers, he let us take the panel. We started a new meeting on Friday nights. We became a group. We got to be bigger than the meeting. We're the Hermosa Beach Monday night group. We're not a men's stag anymore because on Friday night, Karen and her group and the women, that she went to her people and said, we want to start this group about the 12th suggestion, sponsorship. And we have a guy come one week and a woman come the next week and talk about active sponsorship, and there's questions and answers. Like I said, we had 110 people. We went down to 45 people. Now we have 110 people, and there's people standing outside of this meeting. It's an attraction, not promotion. 66%, I'd say that's very close to correct, are under 5 years sober and 23 years old. There's a fire in the belly of this meeting with young people. It came to this meeting as this process was happening. There's a particular, we call him Morpheus?
Yeah.
There's an African-American guy named DeAndre. He's called Morpheus. And he brings, well, we call him that. And he brings his flock. And like I said, at the end of the meeting, when we've now put into the format, and I also wanted to say about the unheard, it has for a long time been a format of this meeting that somebody who shared last week cannot share this week. So it isn't that the same, you know, 20 guys share. It's the same 40 guys because we alternate every week. And now when it's a new thing in our format that At the end of the meeting, it says, if you're willing to sponsor or available for sponsorship to sponsor, raise your hand. And you, to understand the power of that is we talk about Alcoholics Anonymous program of sponsorship and the 12 steps all throughout this meeting. We talk about it all throughout the meeting. There is invariably new guys, and they raise their hand and introduce themselves at the beginning of the meeting before they know what's going to happen. And they raise their hand, and then we talk about sponsorship. They have to hear it. And then we say, we're here. Here's your sponsor. Here we are. It's a big net.
A couple other things happened in the meeting format that couldn't have happened before. Number one is that we also, instead of just...
We always had just AA announcements.
But now, since we're a group, we could also say we'd like announcements. Is there any announcement regarding members of the group? So now, people that have moved away, that it's their birthday, or somebody whose wife is sick, or whose mother is in trouble, or who's, you know, going to court or whatever, can say, would you pray for me, please? This is a wonderful service that people can put whatever it is that they want before the group. It's not a share, but they can state a problem or something, and that they can have the spiritual power of the group with them. And it said just moments before we say the prayer. So what's happened to this
group that was busy doing things right?
Have we become a bunch of hippies? No. No, don't worry. There is more ink and more leather in the meeting that is safe to be around. Just so you know. And there's a lot of unaligned metal, too. But Bill Wilson would be proud about what this meeting is. It's embraced the future. We have no fear about who it is we are. And one of the things when we were putting this together is we saw that we really needed to do this again. That like what I'm suggesting is, I know that here you don't have this problem, but our meeting was not taking inventory. And just like when we talk about sponsorship, we were sponsoring ourselves. And we weren't taking a good look at ourselves. And we saw that we need to do this again. And so we're really excited. And the other thing is that our AA program has been embraced by the future. In other words, these kids are coming to us not because we're holding them down and saying, okay, this is the way to do it. They're attracted to the power and the joy of recovery that the older members demonstrate. And what's the fruit of it? The tweakers have become alcoholics. You know, they understand where they are, that they're in Alcoholics Anonymous. They go along with the structure of the meeting. A tweaker goes like this. Generally, after smoking methamphetamine, or rock cocaine, or any other things, anything that like comes from a glass pipe, they all kind of look the same if you put them in the thing at the same time. The question was, what's a tweaker?
We don't have tweakers here. What
do you call them?
Speed freaks.
Speed freaks. Yeah.
Neurotic cases.
Yeah. Yes. Sputniks.
That's a really old
one. I have to come up with that. But anyway, that they have become alcoholics. These young drug addicts, you know, that always had a 40-ouncer with them while they were smoking rock, they have become members in good standing of our group. And it's not because they're just being good. It's because they want what we have. And not only do they want what we have, but now they have what we have. And they're there to pass it on to others.
Just in closing, this is a great statement here. Don Pritz was a former trustee of Alcoholics Anonymous and a great member of AA, part of the Denver group movement and a very structured kind of a thing. A great man, truly a great man. He died here recently. Every problem in Alcoholics Anonymous can be solved through intelligent, informed sponsorship. I need to know where I am. If I know where I am, if you come to me, I can tell you where you are. What the rules are, what the parameters are, how to behave, how to show respect for the program that you're part of. One of the things, we heard Tom Ivester recently, Jay and I were doing this thing at another event, and Tom said that when the hospital programs really exploded around the country, when they became big in the late 70s and the 80s, Alcoholics Anonymous did not handle that very well. We became adversarial to a large degree. We positioned ourselves against the hospital programs. We didn't like the fact that all the newcomers were coming out of hospitals instead of right off the street. Now, Tom and Sandy Beach will both tell you that people talk about the good old days. There were no good old days, you know. That's a fantasy. I mean, when you were having to take somebody through withdrawals in your living room, that wasn't fun. You know, it's much nicer to have a place to take them to where they can have some medical treatment. Bill Wilson would have been ecstatic about the hospital programs. This is something that he fought for years. He called it the Big 12 Step. Him and Chuck Chamberlain, Tom Pike, many other people went to Washington to try to get them to acknowledge this, to get the insurance industry to do this, to not criminalize the alcoholic. Well, when the hospitals came into being, we didn't handle it well. So let me ask you this. What are we going to do now about these young people coming into Alcoholics Anonymous? Are we going to handle it? Is it true when we say, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to always be there? Is that true or not? Wilson fought for that in 1965. He wanted that statement made as part of Alcoholics Anonymous' lexicon. I sponsor guys now that are 5 years sober and they're 21 years old. For a while I said, well, they see me as a father figure. No, they see me as a grandfather figure. You know, they look at me with those eyes. Oh, you poor, lame, old dude, man. It's like, it's painful. I mean, I had a Christmas party over at my house, and I'm sitting out in the front yard. We put a bunch of furniture out in the front yard, and all these young guys are sitting around. We're all sitting around together, smoking cigars and talking about women and doing what men do, men being men, and boys being boys. And we're all sitting there, and my kids show up, and my son's standing there looking at me, and I realize these guys are his age. I mean, it doesn't strike me, you know? These guys, and my son looked at me and he goes, I had no idea you were hip. This was like, and I went, oh, shit, I could have told you. You know? So when Jay says the tweakers have become alcoholics, how does that happen? How do they know how to behave? We tell them. We let them in. You can come in. You're welcome here. We like you. We want to help you. We let them in. Let's not screw this one up. If these young kids want sobriety, if they want to change their lives, if they want to be safe, let's help them do this. Now, the guys that left the meeting think that these kids are destroying AA. They see a dilution. You'll hear people say that the success rate back in the old days was 75%, and we've lost it. It was not 75%. No one has any idea what it was. Most of the stories in the first edition of the Big Book were removed because those people got drunk. It didn't work better then. It's as effective as it ever was right now. It was effective back then. If you actually did it, you stay sober. If you do the inventory, if you pay back the money, if you help others, you stay sober. The ones that don't stay sober, don't do it. You know, doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter in what order you do the goddamn shit is. If you do it, you stay sober. If you believe it and you buy the package, you stay sober. So nothing threatens Alcoholics Anonymous. These kids can't threaten AA. It's a spiritual movement. It's the single most significant social movement of the 20th century. Anyone can come. You're all welcome. And that's the ethic now of the Hermosa Beach Men's Stag. You can come. But boy, watch your behavior. Seriously. Somebody asked a question about when do you take a hard line. You can tell when to take a hard line. You take one of these young kids aside and you go, look, this is how it works here. You're welcome here. Pay attention. Show us a little respect. And it's not us. Show AA some respect. It's the father of all this. 250 12-step programs. 300 million people have been affected by this. It's not a lightweight deal. And chanting will not destroy it. Kids will not destroy it. Tweakers will not destroy it. Nothing can destroy this thing. Only if we neglect it. Only if we walk away from it.
If I may, the question is, now, from what I heard, you guys are saying that we can help everybody. And how are we going to do that and keep AA AA? Well, back to this thing about intelligent, informed sponsorship. When these people come in, they don't know. One of the things that happens a lot in meetings, at least in this closed men's stag, is we say that, you know, are there any alcoholics here? We all raise our hands. If somebody doesn't raise their hand, they get the hairy eyeball, okay? The second thing is that newcomers identify. You know, we invite them to identify themselves. And if they say, you know, my name's Jerome and I'm an addict, what used to happen is people would scream, "Are you an alcoholic?" And they would invite them to leave. For years, for a decade, I was the guy who walked out of the room with them and said, look, it's about a desire to stop drinking. That's the requirement for membership. Now, just because a tweaker doesn't know that the drink bone is connected to the drug bone, I have to give them enough education so they can diagnose what their problem is. So this is what intelligent, informed sponsorship is. This is what an intelligent, informed group conscience looks like. It's not a matter of we let everybody in, and then at one point, I know you can't believe this, Bill and I were without wives at the same moment for a few minutes. Bill said to me, hey, maybe we should get a place together. He's had some really bad ideas. This was one of them. And I couldn't figure out how to say, you know, this is not going to work. This is going to be one of those murder-suicide pacts that you don't know about. And so I said, yeah, man, we can get a place that's got a really big garage. And we can take all the drug addicts and we can string them up like in the movie Coma. And then we can drip alcohol into them, and we can turn all the addicts into alcoholics, and then we can work the steps with them and have them save their lives. It's a little more work than we're willing to do with the stag. Any other questions?
Can I say something about that? The other thing about singleness of purpose. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a member of the recovery community. Jay likes to say that I'm command central. I've got my computers. I've got everybody's phone numbers. I send out emails. You know, I mean, that's what I'm weird. And one thing I do is I know people. I sponsor people, and I know people that are active members of Cocaine Anonymous, people that are active members of Narcotics Anonymous. If I get some new kid, and he's sitting in my room downstairs, he's telling me his story, and he's never drank, which is frequent. You run into a guy, this guy's a stone-cold drug addict. He's a crack-smoking fool, you know, and he hardly drank at all. And I tell him where he needs to go. I said, well, if that's your case, man, you need to go to NA. You need to go to CA. You are welcome in my meeting. But please, don't hide out in Alcoholics Anonymous. Go where your people are. That's why there's different programs. We are not adversarial with these programs. We work with these programs. And as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will send you where you need to go. I will introduce you to people that will take you there.
There was a hand back there. Yeah, oh, the wonderful question. We were asked, is this something, this taking a group inventory, is this something that we need to do regularly? I think so. I really do. We've actually got the next steering committee meeting. It's going to be proposed, and we're gently guiding the group conscience, you know, talking to some of the gang and letting them know that we think that it's time, because when we were doing this presentation, what happened is we see that this same kind of stuff's happening again in our group, and we want to make sure
there's
that we don't.
More people that believe in it now, too.
Yeah. Yes, miss.
I was wondering, when do you know that there's a reason for being conscious about, you know, like an inventory of the meeting? What really, like, you know, what is a good reason? Because, I mean, you know, just so that codependency doesn't keep on, you know.
Exactly. The question is, when do you know when it's time? Well, the difficulty is in doing it the first time. And one of the great things is that all this stuff is available, and we can forward you the link from Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the group inventory. The name of the pamphlet is the AA group. Whether it's been translated or not, I'm not. But I know that you guys have used it in your STAG meeting, but it's a thing of, we used it in response to a crisis. The next time that we do this, what we're hoping to do is we're hoping to make this an all-day afternoon barbecue. You know, this is us loving our group instead of, you know, correcting things. So I think it's just a matter of, as you are a productive and involved member of your group, if your heart leads you to say to a couple of your friends, you know, I heard these lames. They were from California. They had this experience. Maybe it'd be something that'd be helpful to us. Or you can talk to Baldwin about what it is that they did in their group and how it is that they do their inventory. But what we're trying to do is that to get this message out, to let people know that our experience is we didn't do an inventory, and what happened is our home fell apart, and that there's a format, and that it works really, really well, and it's available, and it's part of AA literature, and it's here for all of us to use. Adele? Thank you. Anything else? Yeah. Let's take a break.
Press it two times.